Can on the light, on the light, otherwise do down. Those at the back also can on the light. Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Now we are at the 6:45 p.m. to 7:15 p.m. slot. There will be a 30 minutes of formal sitting or lying down meditation. So for those who already know how to meditate, you straight away can go into the meditation. Then for those who need instruction, there are some books at the back there. Understanding the meditation is taught by the Buddha. The two blue books, part 1 and part 2. Part 1, there is no mention of part 1. But part 2, there is a mention. Then for those who don't understand lying down meditation, I will suggest you don't do it now unless you got special condition. You cannot sit. You find it difficult to sit, then you can try the lying down. Lying down is the same, except that posture is more relaxed. But if you don't understand, you will fall asleep. So lying down meditation are normally more suitable for those who already have developed the mindfulness. Then you can relax, silent, and maintain mindfulness and meditate. But if you have not developed the spiritual faculties, it may not be easy. You will straight away fall asleep. The tendency is there, because the weather here is so cooling, so conducive, like aircon. Okay. Then, regarding the formal meditation, what you need to do is just to understand based on what I share with you. If your spiritual faculty already developed, straight away silence your mind, meditate. Very easy. If you need to train, then you train. You need to develop the mind swimming method followed by metta. Then anapanasati, you just do it. Then if you want to do the bowing, you can just bow. The bowing is very simple. Have faith in front of the Buddha or anywhere you are. Then you just mindfully pay respect. You can chant Namo Sakyamuni Buddha. Then you bow. Or Namo Kuan Bodhisattva. Then you bow. Then you can also silent and develop the faith and just bow silently. Body and mind as one. Don't try to know. You keep on bowing, bowing, bowing. Have faith. You can also use English if you want. Homage to the Sakyamuni Buddha. Homage to the Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Then you bow. Then walking meditation is also very simple. Relax body and mind, just walk. When you walk, the body and the mind as one, just walk. Don't try to know, just walk. Until the mindfulness comes. When the mindfulness comes, you will understand. The form and mind will know. So I can teach you a simpler technique on walking. Where is the wireless mic? I better use the wireless mic.
This has been one behind. This one's a wireless. It's not recording.
Okay.
For those from there, huh, you may have to come out and a bit to have a look. Huh? You see, there is a very easy, much easier way to walk. I learned this from my teacher Ajayantra, the Thai monk. Instead of you all normally walk to the end, then you intending to turn, then you turn. No need. You just go, come back. Change your footstep only. Go like that, come back like that, understand? Then you straight away come back. I will show you. Eh? You just walk. Body and mind as one. No need to know anything. Just walk naturally in a normal pace, relaxed manner. Mindfulness is about developing the silent mind to be with your kaya. It's about slowing down your thought process, thinking, not slowing down your physical movement. A lot of people got it wrong. They thought they must slow down the physical movement, then only they can be mindful. If you practice that type of mindfulness, you cannot be mindful in the midst of life, because in the midst of life, nobody waits for you. Everything is very fast. Sometimes, modern society, the pace is worse. If you work in the office, if you do that type of mindfulness, you will get a love letter from your boss. Thinking, intending to walk, you will get a love letter, etc. But why can't you just walk normally with mindfulness? The only thing is you have to be mindful. Mindful means silent. The moment I'm silent, I'm just aware. Aware of what? Aware of walking, like the Buddha said, walking aware. So I just walk. Then when I reach the end, I just turn. You can follow. I put down the mind easier, otherwise the wire keep on coming back into the place. As you walk, it will slow down by itself. It will develop its own pace of walking. Everybody is different. I remember that time I just walk until when the mindfulness come. Then I will reach a pace where I don't feel tired. I just feel very good, very relaxed. Those who do morning walk exercise, you will know. You will walk until that pace where you don't talk. You just feel very good. You just walk. And it's very graceful. You just walk. Yeah. But most of the people who walk, they think a lot. If you were to be mindful, you can find out. Throughout the day, you think a lot. Your mental thinking is way ahead of your action and movement. That's why you can never be with the moment. Mindfulness is about anchoring your mind, the awareness, the silent mind, with the thing you are doing. It's just like when I stretch my hand. My mind and this movement is one, aware. Whatever you do, just aware. That is a deed. But as you do, you are not mindful. You are thinking. that is heedlessness. You understand? Can follow? Let's say the phone ring. Okay. What is the first thing that happened? You want to answer that call, yeah? But when you are not mindful, your thought will be active. Who could it be? My boss or who? Then when you take this phone, how your hand move, also you never aware. There is fear. There is worry. That's why this mind, which is heedless, will think a lot. And you are never with the moment. When you are with the moment, when I was in the office 20 over to 30 years ago, when I did the mindfulness training, the phone call ring, the consciousness, the awareness of that hearing, the so-called ringing but no word on, perceive it as it is, that phenomena. Then it trigger off through contact. Then this one is aware. Then this one move to take the call. As it take the call, the hand that hold, you don't have to practice, understand? You just do it naturally. Then you move it back to your earpiece and listen. When you listen attentive, fully aware, then you speak fully aware. Then when you put back, you have to train. This is heedful training in heedfulness, to be with the moment all the time. Then as you walk, body and mind as one. But you are so used to thinking. Even when you sit, you think a lot. When you walk, you think a lot. That's why you can never be mindful, be with the moment. So the training is very different when you want to do daily mindfulness. When I walk to the door, how my hand move and turn on the doorknob, and how it push and how it come up, fully aware, and how it close back, fully aware. Initially, you have to train it this way. Until when you become very stable, very skillful, then everything you do is with sati, because your mind is already in sati. And then you no need to train. You are already in sati. Your nature is in sati. Everything you do is in sati. Because your mind is always silent. Fully aware. Then all your movement, your action, this nature can be aware. But to reach that state, it takes a while, okay? So initially, just do what that is within your capacity to do. You have to slowly transform the way you live your life from a heedless way of active thinking to a mindful, heedful way of living life. Then you realize every time you do things, you are very mindful. And when you are very mindful, you have a lot of clarity. Then you realize you are always with the moment, always aware. Then when you do your driving also, a lot of clarity, very beautiful. It's very different. You have to experience them. Okay? Any question so far? Regarding walking or bowing? Bowing, very simple, isn't it? Body and mind as one. Don't try to know, just bow. Yeah. Bow until the sati come, you will know. Walking also, just walk. Initially, there will be thought, never mind, let it arise. Don't resist it, don't fight it. Like the mental hindrance, don't resist it, don't fight it. Just understand that the untrained mind is heedless, think a lot. So let it be. So now, I have to train this mind. How do I train? I just maintain silent. I just determine to be aware. I just do. Do until the mindfulness come. Then the form and mind that is connected to the mindfulness will know, will understand what sati is. It's not the word anymore. It's the actual mindfulness, the awareness and the activity as one. When you can be mindful of your kaya, then when your mind enters sati, it can be mindful of external phenomena. That's why specific phenomenal awareness within your seeing consciousness, like a passing car. Your mind can be aware of that car movement. The the mind and the car move as one. Then even the wheel that is turning, there is no concept one. The mind is fully aware of that movement. Then the three branches, the flow of nature, even this vibration, is fully aware with it. It's just like that. That is when your mind is in sati. Then all the hearing is with mindfulness. All the seeing is with mindfulness. Then later on, your thought process also. Every movement or activity of mind, you are fully aware of thinking. You are not just heedlessly thinking because of habitual tendency. Then you act according to understanding. You no longer act according to memory. Your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. Most human beings act according to memory. Your conditioned mind, your views, your opinion. When you see something, you check with memory. Then you act according to what your views, your opinion, your conditioning, and your belief system tell you. So this way of acting, you are acting out of fear, worry, anxiety, delusion, selfishness. Well, what is memory? Memory is our accumulation. You know what is accumulation? Accumulation are experiences. Whatever you experience in life, you accumulate them as memory, good or bad. That's the reason why you look at Mahayana, the second noble truth. They use a different term to describe second noble truth. They never say the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, is craving, is attachment. The second noble truth, according to Mahayana, what is it? Ku ji. Ji is accumulation. So to them, accumulation is suffering. How do you accumulate? You accumulate as memory. That's why when you accumulate as memory, this memory creates conditioned thinking. That's why thought is respond to memory. And you input your content according to your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, your belief system. That's how you act. And when you act that way, you are acting out of fear. You are acting out of selfishness, delusion. Why? Because what you accumulate are all your phobia, your fear, your happy moment and unhappy moment. So all this, your views, your opinion that you are conditioned into believing. From there, you act. That's why J. Krishnamurti say, acting according to memory is not acting at all. And this is what meditation is all about. You must see all this. This is Chittanupassana. Accumulation of all this wrong thought, wrong view, wrong action and wrong speech, the wrong understanding, self-delusion and all things. And from there you act. You are bound to make severe mistake, commit severe negative tendency or karma. And these are all evil roots before you are enlightened. Then you will have the question that, Brother Teo, how should we act if I don't act according to memory, which is the only instrument I have? Then how should we act? How should you act? Anybody want to try? What is action? How do you act in life? If I don't use memory, how can I act? Intuition is one of them, which is very good. Yeah, intuition. The intuition is not from memory, understand? You know what is intuition? Like your sixth sense, understand? Your intuition is actually your conscience, understand? Your conscience. Your conscience will know how to act. But that one is very difficult to have because not everybody have that. So under normal circumstances, before you are enlightened, how do you act? What did the Buddha teach you? What did the Buddha teach you? What is right action? Louder. Ah, without evil roots. And what is without evil roots? Without evil roots means without the three evil roots of maybe lower the mic volume a bit. May not have so much distortion. Without the three evil roots. The three evil roots are greed, hatred, and delusion. Why are they called the evil root? A lot of Buddhists, surprisingly, they only know the theory. They can repeat greed, hatred, delusion. But why did the Buddha say they are evil root? Do you know why? When you have them in your mind state, they make you evil, understand? Where they are the root of all evil. So when you have greed, means what? Not only greediness, all of your selfishness is also greed. That's why selfish people, they have greed. Those who are lustful, they also have this evil root of greed. Then those who are possessive. That's why you have to understand the Dhamma deeply. Otherwise, you cannot apply. You cannot apply means you cannot live it. Means you cannot act. Understand? You act with right view, right understanding. That these are evil roots, root of all evil. If I have them, it make me evil. If you have selfishness in your heart, are you a kind person? You definitely cannot be a kind person. Selfish people only think of themselves. They are very selfish in their approach to things. If you have a lot of lustfulness, if you are very possessive, you want to control your spouse, your wife, your children, your subordinate. How can you have goodness, kindness? Means you are evil. Everything also is about you. Beneficial to you, only you do. That is selfishness. Then covetousness. There are a lot more. Covetousness. You can expand on the list. Then when it comes to hatred, the evil root of hatred. It's not only when I hate you I got this evil root. What are the other mind state that are linked to this evil root? Good. Envy, jealousy. These are all negative tendency. Then some more? They are vengeance. Your vengeance. Then some more? Jealousy got ready. Vengeance. How to spell? C-E. Your dislike. Your aversion. Understand? Dislike. Aversion. Then your unhappiness. And later on, of course, sorrow, lamentation. So all these other evil roots make you miserable, unhappy. Then what is delusion? Delusion means what? What are the mind state that leads to delusion? No, denial is not delusion. Or in a certain way, yes. In a certain way, when you are deluded, you keep on denying because you want to be right. But a more strong one is when you have fear. worry, anxiety, then your mind becomes restless. This is a mental hindrance, remember? Restlessness of mind. These are all delusion. When you have delusion, you will have fear because you don't understand the truth. That's why doubt and all those things, they are all part of delusion. So the Buddha say these are the evil roots, roots of all evil. If your mind state has this, greed, hatred and delusion, karmically you will fall. You will become evil. Because these are the root of all evil. When you have jealousy, envy, when you have violent character, when you are violent, this one, another one is violent. When you are violent. Yeah. So all this will create negativity of karma. You can kill, you can harm, you can cause a lot of disruption, all of war, all of suffering and misery come from this evil root. When somebody is possessive, selfish, authoritative, very dominant in his character, very violent, they create a lot of evil, enmity. The other one is enmity. So this one is also enmity. So this one is a very wide field. And all this come about because of delusion. This is the main culprit. There is this self-delusion. And because you think you exist, when you think you exist, what happened? You created the egoic mind. You think this five aggregate of form and mind is you. So this one become real to you. So this is the so-called human being. So the Buddha said, as a human being, you have a physical body. That's why this is your physical form, body form. And this is your consciousness, which is your mind. So you are the form and mind. And they subdivide the mind into four more aggregates. That's why this becomes the five aggregates of form and mind. And the Buddha summarized all of suffering, is it? When you attach and cling to this five aggregates of form and mind, suffering will arise. So because of this self-delusion, this one become egoic. You know what is egoic? Egoic. You create a personality. Personality, an ego. When you believe you exist, what happens? You will try to own things in there, possess things in there. True or not? When you think you exist, what is the next thing you want to have? You want to desire thing, possess thing, and own thing in there. Now this is where the evil root of greed, selfishness, come about. Then when people do something to this form of mind, you will get angry, you will get violent. So this one, anger was not there. Anger not there. Anger. That's how all the evil arise. Then when you don't understand, you trigger fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. And these are the three evil roots that arise through self-delusion. Without self-delusion, there is no grasping and clinging, no greed, no hatred. Without self-delusion, there is no evil. So the main problem comes from self-delusion, which is the result of ignorance. Ignorance of the truth, the reality, the nature's law that governs life and existence. So this part you have to understand first. So in order to know how to act, we need to understand this teaching. That's why in the Bodhisattva vow, you have to understand this. What constitutes evil? Why did the Buddha say greed, hatred, and delusion is evil? Because when you have them in your mind state, in your heart, especially anger, hatred, you know how evil you have become. Out of hatred, out of anger, you can become so jealous and violent. So these are evil, root of all evil. When you hate somebody, you not only create the negativity or hatred and hit out at people, you create your own suffering. Because to hate somebody is to have a lot of evil root of anger and hatred inside you. And this is the root of all evil and make you evil. Karmically, you will fall. So all this, the Buddha say, these are from your thought. These are the content of consciousness you put in. Because you have self-delusion, you develop the greed. You input that consciousness. And this is from memory. Because you are selfish. That's why you act in a selfish way. You act in an emotional way. You act out of fear. All your accumulated phobia, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, or even your happy moment and all those things, you attach, you cling. Then when things don't go your way, you recall to memory, you develop the opposite, the anger, the hatred. So acting according to memory, which is full of the evil roots and wrong view before you are enlightened, you are not acting at all, because you are acting out of greed, hatred, delusions, fear, worry, anxiety, selfishness, possessiveness. And that is completely wrong action, because these are evil action. Then how should you act? What did the Buddha teach you? If you want to overcome all of your suffering, what must you do? You must cultivate. Noble Eightfold Path. This is the meditation. Cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. That's why this one becomes the meditation. If you do that, the Buddha said, it will lead to the end of all suffering. And this is what you must act. You act with wisdom. The Noble Eightfold Path is wisdom. What is Noble Eightfold Path? This one is the wisdom or teaching taught by the Buddha. Advice of all Buddhas. Noble Eightfold Path you can divide into Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. That's why they are all connected. They are all linked. Then later on, they introduce another Dana, Sila, and last one is what? Bhavana. What is Bhavana? Bhavana is the meditative training. And Bhavana is actually Samadhi and Panya. So it's the same. Except they add in dana. Dana is generosity. When you have this generous mind, generosity, this mind of kindness, goodness, generosity, without dana, very difficult to have the merits and the condition and parami to walk this way, to develop the meditation and the cultivation. Because when your life condition is so miserable, it's very difficult to find time to meditate. Food and shelter also don't have. Where got time for meditation? So dana parami, generosity parami, is very important. Then when you have Dhanaparami, you can invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions for you to develop the meditation. So under Noble Eightfold Path, we got 8 path factors. First one is right view, or right understanding. Second one is what? Good. Understanding. Then you got right thought. Then you got, the third one is what? Right speech. Then? Right action. Then? Right living or right livelihood. Yeah? Right living or right livelihood. Then you got right effort. The 4 right effort. Then you got right mindfulness. Sati or mindfulness. And right samadhi. If you act according to this, you will come to realize that all these are wisdom. When you have right view, means you have right view with regards to all the nature's law that governs life and existence. Means you have right understanding, you have wisdom. You are wise, and you have wisdom, because you know the nature's law that governs life and existence. And what are they? The 5 universal order the Buddha mentioned, Pancha Niyama. First 2 is scientific law, Uttu Niyama and Bijja Niyama. They are the nature's physical law and nature's biological law. That's why scientists progress so fast once they have understood these 2 laws and breakthrough. Similarly, the Buddha, he is in the spiritual field. He understood the next 3 spiritual laws. Karma Niyama, the law of karma. Citta Niyama, the law of mind. Dhamma Niyama, the law of Dhamma or truth. That's why he became an expert in the spiritual field, just like the scientist. And he has this great wisdom. He know how to live life. That's why you don't have right view, you cannot act. Just like just now, Gladys and the husband were here. I just briefly explained to them. I said, how do you act? You act according to wisdom, which is Noble Eightfold Path. When you have right view, let's say somebody cheat you, deceive you, or con you, or harm you, stole from you, and make you miserable. What are you going to do? Get angry, take revenge, fight him, or report him to the police? Then what do you do? You create more anger, more hatred, understand? More evil. Then not only he suffer, you also suffer. You also create negativity or karma. Then if you act according to the Noble Eightfold Path, how do you act? You will understand the spiritual law, the law of karma. You reap what you sow. And what did the Buddha say? Whatever that happened to you in life, there are causes and conditions behind. It doesn't happen by chance. And what are these causes and conditions that the Buddha has explained? He asks you to contemplate every day, the 5 daily contemplation, the last one. He said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. Everything points towards karma. Born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. You are what you are because of karma, every moment, every instant. So definitely what happened to you has to do with karma, understand that? Means in the past, you must have robbed people, steal from people, deceive people, do all these funny things to people. Now got condition, you become the victim. Fair enough. You reap what you sow. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. Because you planted the seed of evil in the past. That's why all this come back to you. So if you have this right view, how will you act? You will not blame them anymore. you will not hate them anymore. You just accept them for what they are. Because in the past, you must have done all this. So you need to ask for forgiveness, repentance, not from them, from all beings from the distant past until now. Then vow not to repeat this. Then when you understand this law, then you know it's not worthwhile to commit evil, to commit negativity or karma, to have this evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, because this will make you evil. So Dhammapada verse 1 we have gone through. You act, speak, and think with a heedless mind, a wicked mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. What will happen to your life? Suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follow the hoof. Is that what you want? If that is what you want, by all means, continue to be heedless, continue to be angry, to have hatred and jealousy, and continue to fear, worry, anxiety. Then continue to take revenge, hit out at others, see what happened to your life. So these are very simple teaching. If you act with noble eightfold path, your right view, you will be able to accept them for what they are. There are causes and conditions behind. I know these are the things I have done before. So I am not going to do this anymore. If I do this, in future, I will get back. Yeah. For me to get angry, no point, because this is what you have done for people. And when you react to what happened and get angry and stir your mind, you create more mental hindrance, more mental evil roots, and you will create more negativity or karma. And that is how living beings fall. Then all this come about because of self-delusion. When you have self-delusion, you believe this is real, this is you. Then you worry about this physical body when you attach to form. The Buddha said, the final summary, when you deludedly believe this is you, when you deludedly cling and attach to this fine aggregate of form and mind, the Buddha said, suffering will arise. You don't have to believe it. We can prove it. The first aggregate is your physical body. If you attach to this body, what will happen to you? You believe this is you. You will worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. True or not? Do you suffer? You will definitely suffer. When you confront old age, sickness, and death, you will have a lot of problem, fear, worry, anxiety, because you think this is you. But who in the right frame of mind will say this is not me? Unless you meditate and realize that this is just element. Element, no knowing, cannot be you. You know, element, not you. But the mind, the consciousness, you say, I can feel. I can think. I can have joy, have happiness. I can do what I like. What you say is not me. Now then we come to the mind. Means the mind, the Buddha subdivide further into feeling, perception, activity of mind, and consciousness. All these four, the Buddha said, they are also not you. If you attach and cling, you will suffer. If you attach to your feeling, what happened? Huh? You only want good feeling in there. Pleasant feeling in there. Unpleasant feeling you don't like. So, you will be afflicted because the world is the world. Like this weather here. Just now was very nice, the aircon. But as it become more and more cold, middle of the night, then you find it difficult to tolerate. Then you begin to dislike. You say, why not next day when the sun come out, it will be so much better. But today, luckily, afternoon, very hot sun. So tonight, not so cold. Hopefully. So when you attach to feeling, the problem with feeling is You got like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant feeling. So you cling to pleasant feeling. When you cannot get what you want, the Buddha said, you will suffer because you attach to good feeling. You cannot endure. When condition is such, you have to endure, you have to endure. But if you already warned by Sui An, show you the weather forecast, everything, you somehow don't want to bring your warm clothing, what can Sui An do? It's you, understand? Then you can still have a solution. You ask around. Some will bring extra. I bring extra. You need, you see me. But enough for one person. So you have to develop the understanding. So feeling, the Buddha say, is not you. Why? You will never agree that feeling is not you. That, hey, brother, I feel it, you know. Painful feeling, pleasant feeling. I really feel it, you know. Why you say not me? What is your answer? What do you think? Is feeling really you? You say you experience it, you feel it. Is it really you? Why you say not you? The Buddha's explanation is also very beautiful, but I later on developed the contemplation easier to understand. Do you know what the Buddha say? He said, if feeling is you, means you have control over this feeling, it will not lead to suffering. It will not bring about suffering to you, because feeling belongs to you. I want feeling to be thus, and feeling will not be otherwise. Means you can say, I want this pleasant feeling to remain. I don't want unpleasant feeling to arise. But you have gone through life, isn't it? Can you control your feeling? Can you do anything to your feeling? Because you are a physical body with the senses and the mind which is conscious of it. Upon contact, consciousness will arise. And whatever that happened to this physical body, the mind will experience it. That's what karma is all about. Your consciousness trapped inside this body, that's why it can experience all this negativity of mind state conditioned by karma. And through delusion and ignorance you attach, you suffer. But if you have wisdom, suffering need not be. Despite the harsh condition, you will know, this is not me. When there is condition to have warm clothing, I will bring along, I will wear it, then I will know how to avoid it. If I forgot, I totally got no other way, then I have to endure, I have to endure. You are still at peace, that's why you don't suffer. You only suffer when you cannot come to terms with the reality, when you cannot accept the truth of nature. Nature's law is like that. Condition like that, things will be like that. You cannot have otherwise. That's why you cannot have things your way. Nature's way is different. So when you have this wisdom to understand all this, then your mind is different. Then you will not develop affliction. That is the Buddha's explanation. Mind is easier. If feeling is you, when that feeling arises and passes away, did you die? You didn't die, is it? True or not? The unpleasant feeling, the anger that you have, after the condition no more exists to be there, means that angry feeling ceases. But you didn't die, you're still around, understand? So how can feeling be you? If feeling arises and passes away, you didn't die, then feeling can never be you. Then why do you say, I feel? Feeling is me. You see the point? If feeling is not you, then how come it arises in you? Then who are you? What are you? Because you cannot understand who are you, what are you. You deludedly think that this form of mind is you. That's why you develop self-delusion. Sakkaya ditti. That's how living beings suffer. But when you understand that this is karmically conditioned out form of mind, for your nature to come to this world, to live life, to experience life, to do whatever you want, then the understanding is different. Then you start to look at it. Oh, if it's not me, but it is karmically conditioned out for me to use, to live life, then I use the form and mind to live life, to experience life to the fullest, to live life to the fullest, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. Then I don't have to worry about life. I don't have to worry about this form and mind. You understand? But this is not me. You understand? Like you are the owner of the car and the chauffeur. The chauffeur is your driver. The car is because you got money you can buy. So that chauffeur and the car, if it belongs to you, you can use it, isn't it? Then anything happen, nothing to do with you. But if you deludedly believe that car and the driver is you, then when the car get into trouble, you feel miserable. So the analogy can let you understand better. This mind that is trapped inside is like your driver that drives this physical body around, understand? This is like a vehicle that take you around. The mind is the driver that moves this body. Why can't you see the analogy that this physical body is just a vehicle to take you around, and the conscious mind is just like a driver that drives this body? They are just like the car and the chauffeur. The chauffeur and the car are two different entities, eh? Correct? Huh? It's the driver and the car the same. But you cannot differentiate, no? You think these two is the same, no? That's why you say this is me, I, Brother Teo, me lah. That's how you become miserable. But when you understand that this is the car karmically conditioned out for me to come and use, then I don't have to worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. I just use it whenever it can serve me, like the car, understand not? Take me around. Any part can still serve me, I will appreciate. Then when the car get accident, do you feel painful? You don't feel painful. Your purse, money has to spend. Because you deluded. Because the car is the car. Accident already, the reality. I need to repair and repair. That's it, finish. So this body, you cannot see, you know, like the car. If it got problem, accident or sickness, you need to see a specialist, see somebody who can fix it, get it fixed, understand? But when the car get damaged, you also worry, and because you feel that the car is you, you think you are part of it, you also suffer. It's actually your purse suffer. That's why you become emotional. But this physical body is different because it's consciousness is connected to it, understand? Not like the car, completely detached from you, understand? That's why it's slightly different. The consciousness will feel it. Whenever you got injury, disease, sickness, this is how consciousness trapped inside can let you experience the retribution of karma. That's the only difference. Then when you experience the retribution of karma without wisdom, without right view, nobody for power, you cannot come to terms with that reality. That's how you suffer. But the enlightened being, they know. This one goes the way of nature. Like the Buddha asks us to contemplate, this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So when you have that understanding, right view, you are at peace. You will not suffer. That's the difference. When there is wisdom, there is no self-delusion. Without self-delusion, there is no attachment to the physical body. That's why you can still be free. Then when it comes to aggregate of mind, it's the same. Feeling come and go, you didn't die. Perception come and go, you didn't die. Thought arise and pass away, you didn't die. Consciousness arise and pass away, you didn't die. Then the Buddha asks you a very simple question. If they are you, when they pass away, you should die. But since you didn't die, so the question is, who are you? What are you? How did all these aggregates of feeling, perception, consciousness, and thought process arise in you? And this is what meditation is all about. When you completely silent, then through that silence, you will awaken. You will come to realize that all this aggregate of mind, which is your feeling, your perception, your activity of mind or thought process, mental state, and the consciousness, they are dependent originating, condition arising. That's why they exhibit the characteristics of impermanent. If you cannot realize that, you attach, you cling, thinking that feeling is you. Everything you come to perceive is real. All of the thought that you arise, the mental state you arise, they are what you are. Then whatever consciousness you come to experience, whether it's seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, or thought consciousness, if you believe that they are you, then you will suffer. That's why the Buddha said, our consciousness, the analogy is like a magician, create magic for you to see illusion, to delude you. The illusion is create illusion to deceive you. Then feeling is like a bubble, pop, gone. Then perception is like a mirage, not real. Then sankhara is like a banana stem, as you peel at the center of it, at the core of existence, is empty, hollow, nothing. So all these are the analogy that the Buddha developed for you to understand the universal characteristics of impermanent, empty nature. If you attach, you cling through self-delusion, you suffer. That's how you can develop the wisdom to liberate your mind. So everything comes from wisdom, right view, right understanding. Then after that, you will know how to live life and act. You act according to Noble Eightfold Path. Right view will condition right thought. What are right thought? Right thought are opposite of wrong thought. In the sutta, in the teaching, what is being taught nowadays, they teach you very funny dhamma. I also don't know how it come about. You know what are the right thought they teach you? Yeah? The four Brahma Vihara. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeka. You know what are they? Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And they say these four are right thought, which is not wrong. But does it help you? Does it help you? He said you go and meditate on metta. You go and cultivate compassion. You go and cultivate sympathetic joy. And you go and cultivate upekkha. To me, all this doesn't help you. What is important is what is wrong thought. Understand? That is more important, isn't it? Like the three evil roots. You tell me these are the evil roots, root of all evil. But you don't teach me what are these. It doesn't serve me, understand? Then how can I cultivate? I cannot even be mindful of all these that constitute the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Because I thought only greediness. As long as I don't have greediness, I thought that evil root is not there. You understand? That's why they never teach you all this. So you have to go into the detail. This is what we share in the Bodhisattva Vow. Then I want to run through this so that when I go through the Heart Sutta note, we can just understand it very fast. Yeah, this is very important. So similarly, the five aggregate of form and mind. Yeah? If you understand that they are not you, if you are not deluded by it, not deceived by it, then your mind can free. Yeah? Then when you have the right view, not to cling, not to attach, then it will condition the right thought. You must understand what constitutes right thought. To understand what constitutes right thought, you must understand what constitutes wrong thought, evil. So now I ask you a question. What constitutes wrong thought? Because if you cannot recognize wrong thought, how can you cultivate? Because the four right effort here, the first right effort is what? To abandon. Right effort to abandon what? Huh? Right? Effort to abandon what? Unwholesome thought and wrong thought that has arisen. You don't even know what is wrong thought, what is unwholesome thought. So how can you cultivate to abandon it? So what are wrong thought? What are they? Yeah? Thought that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, the evil roots. Understand? All the thought that has the evil roots, they are all wrong thought. Because these are root of all evil. And then very easy, isn't it? Then I ask myself, hey, this Dhamma is useful. If I have this wrong thought, it will condition my fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. And this is my life. I don't want to end up like that. So what must you do? Because there is a lot of our Kayamita last time got depression before they come. Some 16 years, some 20 over years, some 30 over years. Then when they heard this, they start to realize one major awakening. They say, no wonder they are so depressed and so miserable. Well, they check. All their thoughts are this type of thought. Envy, jealousy, hatred, selfishness. Always think of themselves. Why are my brothers and sisters like that? Treat me like that. Why my good friend also cheat me, deceive me, lie to me? Why the world lie? Everybody lie. But they never realize they themselves also lie. Understand? Then, when they realize this, they say, my life, I used to tell them, you as an individual, you hold a key to your own life destiny. You understand? So to be happy or to be miserable is your choice. Can agree to that or not? Yeah? If you choose to be happy, who can make you miserable? Yeah? Except yourself through your own self-delusion, continue to think that way and live life that way. That's why nobody make you miserable except yourself. The reason why you become like that is because you don't love yourself. You know what is loving yourself? Huh? Love yourself. What happens if you don't love yourself? Huh? Don't go and think of that type of funny thing. No. Where got people love themselves? Huh? I don't mean that. Huh? I say love in the actual sense. I give you an example. If you love your children, your parents, your brothers, your sister, how will you treat them? If you truly love them, how will you treat them? You go all out to protect them, isn't it? To sacrifice for them, to make sure they have good life, they don't suffer. And that is love. Can follow? Have you done this to yourself? Protect yourself, sacrifice for yourself. Don't allow yourself to become miserable and harm. Have you done that to yourself? You, throughout the day, most of the time, have self-delusion, think of the wrong thought, and make yourself miserable, sorrowful, depressed, until enter depression. Now you understand why you don't love yourself. Because you don't know how to use thought. I really told you, this form and mind, they are karmically conditioned, the tool and vehicle for you to come to this world. So use them wisely. The physical body you know how to use already. Don't worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. But it's not you. So use it. Live. Can experience life to the fullest. Experience it. Can live life to the fullest. Live. Yeah. Then can experience the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Go for it. Then when it comes to the mind, this mind is like a tool given to you through the law of karma for you to use, to come to this world and use, to train it, to develop heedfulness, wisdom, to understand life, to be free from suffering, to become enlightened. But you don't use it this way. You use it to arise the wrong thought, to torture yourself, torment yourself, and make yourself miserable, and hit out at others, and make others miserable too, creating negativity or karma. Is that the right way to use that thought or that mind? Is it the right way? Why not? Because this one, the mind, if it's a tool, for you to use. What happens if I change this to a knife? You must use it with understanding, isn't it? What do you use the knife for? Just now those who help to cut fruits, they don't, isn't it? Cut vegetables, shape things. But if you use that knife to cut yourself, harm yourself, and hit out at others, is that the right way to use this tool? Wrong, isn't it? Definitely wrong, isn't it? But do you know you are using your thought precisely this way, like a knife? You think the wrong thought and harm yourself, hurt yourself, and make yourself so miserable and so depressed. And this is what the Buddha Dhamma is all about. Dhammapada verse 1, he said, your life, you decide. Very easy. To be happy, follow Dhammapada verse 2. Train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful, to abandon all these wrong thoughts. Then develop the wisdom to prevent them from arising. Then cultivate with the right effort to arise the right thought which are still not in you. I will go into the right thought after this. Then the final right effort is to refine upon and perfect all these right thoughts so that you have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path. You have the right thought that will condition the right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The right thought is based on right view. If your view is right, your thought will be right. And your mental intention behind your thought condition your action, speech, and livelihood or living. That's how all this will fall into place. But when you don't have the wisdom, the right view, you are heedless and deluded. Wrong view will condition wrong thought. Wrong thought will condition wrong speech, wrong action, wrong life. Then whole lot of the Noble Eightfold Path will fall apart. That's why without right view, without wisdom, you cannot act. You have to act with right view, according to the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching. Then everything you do will bring about wholesomeness. Then what is right thought? When you use the mind or the thought process correctly, like the knife, then it serves you, it helps you. So right thought are thought that brings about what? Harmony, love, compassion, peacefulness, gentleness, kindness, happiness, joy. Harmony is the most important. So all the thoughts that are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are right thought. So let us give an example of right thought. What are right thought? When you have gratitude towards somebody, is that a right thought? There is no greed, hatred, and delusion in it. Kanan, gratitude. Then when you are honest, sincere, isn't that a right thought? When you are being respectful, kind, pleasant, gentle, when you speak gentle, pleasant, and kind speeches that can bring about harmony, peacefulness, joy, and happiness, these are all right thoughts. That's why there are skills to communicate, to act. And if you look at Noble Eightfold Path, all these path factors are related to life. You can follow, If you don't have the right view and right understanding of all the nature's law that governs life and existence, you cannot live life. True or not? This right view not only includes all the nature's law that governs life and existence, it includes understanding who you are, what you are. what this five aggregate of form and mind is, and what your true nature is. You understand? That's why when you don't understand even who you are, what you are, then how can you understand life? How can you live life? Who is living your life? The thought which is deluded, living your life. That's why living beings suffer a lot. Then when you have right view, right understanding, you become very different. Yeah. Then you will know that this is life. According to the Buddha, if I train myself, develop heedfulness, mindfulness, to see all this evil arise before I effort to abandon them and prevent them from arising, then I cultivate right thought. It will bring about good life. Then there is happiness, there is peacefulness, there is harmony, there is love, there is compassion, there is equanimity of mind, then there is tranquility, stillness, and peacefulness of mind. And this is what life is all about. To have this right thought leading to the right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And I say it's related to life because in life, after you have this right understanding and right wisdom, you will understand life, you understand who you are, what you are, and you know how to live. Then, to live life, you have to constantly arise your thought. Correct? True or not? Do you have to arise your thought to live life? Throughout the day, you have to arise your thought. But if you arise right thought, then you take care of karma. You develop good blessing, good merits. That's why your life becomes beautiful. Then if you arise right speech and right action, if you talk to people in a very pleasant and gentle manner, with love, with kindness, with sincerity, with understanding, then people can feel you. They feel safe when they are with you. Then they have love, they have joy, they feel peacefulness when they are around you. Then because you are so righteous, you act righteously, you never cheat, you never steal, you never kill, you never harm, you never commit adultery, you never partake intoxicant. That's why all your actions are beautiful. You never arise all the wrong speech, the wrong thought. Then you live life righteously following Noble Eightfold Path. You are a true blessing to humanity, to all of mankind and living beings. That's why if you have Noble Eightfold Path, you are the truly enlightened being, noble ones. Because you are very noble in all aspects of life. Not only the way you understand life, the way you conduct yourself, you arise the right thought, right speech, right action, and you have right understanding to live life. Then your four right effort to constantly purify yourself, to make yourself beautiful, you always cultivate. Then with mindfulness and samadhi, you are heedful, you are ever mindful, constantly meditative to perfect yourself. So all this is what life is all about. This is the real meditation related to life. When you understand this, you understand life, you understand the whole of the Buddha's teaching. Then after that, when I go through the Heart Sutta, it will be very easy for you all to develop the understanding. Is it clear? Some of you nod your head, the rest I don't know. If you can't understand, you have opportunity to raise your hand, to ask. For those who have been with me for quite a while, I think they already have the understanding. But for those who are new, you don't have to remember anything because it's recorded. It will be on the website later on. You have to thank the committee member who do it, especially Sui An doing the recording, then Brother Tiu, Brother Chin Hao, and Sister Pamasuri, they all, even Ng Bi and others, Puan Chi, and Gladys and many people who helped to do the translation and all those things. What they call transcript. Not translation, sorry, used the wrong word, transcript. So all this will come about and you can listen to it again. What you need to do is be attentive when you are here. Attentively listen. The art of listening. There's a brown book there, House Dana, Understanding. The essential Dhamma is taught by the Buddha. You look at that book. It was a talk given at Brother Sia and Sister Nancy at the House Dana in Klang. It's a very good book. I explain all the important things. So, all this understanding, you can have them. Okay. Any question? Sorry, I take up your 30 minutes of meditation. You don't have meditation. But I feel that this is more useful for you. You can meditate later. I also supposed to have an evening puja. Then I promise you just now, our morning puja, afternoon puja, we haven't chanted the aspiration through our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. We offer the tray where there is clear water, there is an incense, then there is this candle inside, then the fruits, the flower. All this has a lot of meaning. After this, I will go through with you all. Do you have any question? So, what does it mean? Everything understood. No question. Okay, I think I will do the puja thing. Oh, sorry. Supposed to have evening chanting. I will do the puja first, then evening chanting. Then see how much time we have. We can have some Q&A. Okay. I will start by reciting to you the puja aspiration.